Get ready for the Ocelli effect.
I'm a big fan of the show.
Chuck Ocelli, and he's been known for many years as the blind JFK researcher specializing in intelligence agency involvement in multiple assassination, propaganda, and other global criminal operations in the 20th and 21st centuries.
Your listeners are extremely fortunate to have you, and everybody at AFR I know loves you, man.
We should learn from our relatively recent history, my brother. That's where I'm coming from. I say all power to the people.
And now, the most underrated voice in all media. The alternative. Chuck Ocelli.
It is the 30th day of November, according to that thing we call a calendar, allegedly. And this is the Ocelli Effect, broadcast live on American Freedom Radio from the facilities of AmericanFreedomRadio.com. That is where the live show originates from, though we do welcome you regardless of the fondle slab of choice, your applicable application, or other networks that might actually replay this or stream it. You are equally welcome to the show tonight anyway. Must say that it is an interesting week. Now, I did change things up, and Monday, although I didn't plan on it, we had Sherry Wisdom on the show, and she's not going to be doing Mondays with me anymore. I've removed her from that co-host position in order to put Barry Prince on there because I wanted to give Barry a consistent place to be on the show, and Sherry totally understands that. However, it's Wednesday, and Sherry Wisdom is with me. So, how you doing tonight, Sherry?
Hi, Chuck. Of course, I'm fabulous.
Fabulous as per usual. Now, I don't know if fabulous will continue to prevail. We're definitely going to have...
Yeah, I kind of got that feeling, Chuck. Thank you so much. This is going to be a very interesting dynamic, and I'm interested to hear how this show rolls, and... We'll just kind of listen and make a determination a little later, huh?
Exactly. Now, why is it we're saying this? You guys might say, well, what is it these guys are going to do tonight? Obviously, we're not going to get into the hooker paradigm once again. No, I think I've gotten enough flack for that, although there may be episode 2 in the works. We're not going there. Not tonight. But that being said, here's what it was time to do. As per the requests of various people, they have asked me over the past few months especially, what happened to Ocelli and the Greek, which was a separate show that we did on American Freedom Radio and ran 18 episodes. There are a couple of bonus episodes that are only available in certain places, so on and so forth. We made an impromptu appearance on Jack Blood's Radiothon one time. I don't know how long that went. I'm sure it was more than an hour. The two of us did a few interesting conversations for you guys, and people have asked me, why is it that you don't have the Greek on the show? Why is it that you guys stopped doing that? My only answer up to this point has been, well, the Greek decided that 18 episodes was sufficient. It wasn't because I wanted him removed. It wasn't because I was sick of doing it. I mean, the exploration of the ideas and the fact that I was actively behaving as a sounding board for the Greek's views, I thought was an interesting presentation for sure. And we did it on Saturdays, and then we did it on Fridays here on American Freedom Radio. If you look hard enough, you can still find the archives out there. And if you can't, hey, go to my YouTube channel or Ocelli.com, and there is a section for just that show, in fact. So people have asked me this question, and recently Eddie, in fact, I'm not going to name him any further than that, but Eddie, who is somebody who listened to that show quite often, approached me once again and said, you need to get the Greek back on your show. Which is how that whole thing started. He appeared on my show after listening to me substituting for Vinnie Eastwood and then decided that I would be an interesting co-host for him. That's kind of how that really evolved. That's the behind-the-scenes truth. But guess what, folks? We got the Greek back with us tonight, and this time with Sherry Wisdom also along for the ride. I dare say this will be a fascinating conversation. So, how are we doing tonight, Greek? Are you in a fit and proper mood, sir?
Hey, yes, no kidding. Moods are for children, man. Hey, how's it going, everyone? Thanks for having me, Chuck. Let's have some fun. Yeah.
So, as always, that is the prevailing rule here at AFR. You know, there are no rules, there are no taboo topics, all of that, but you know what? We're going to have fun one way or another. And, it is great to have you back on. Of course, you're one of the more interesting people that I've had conversations with during my time, doing this. And it's because, well, you don't have the most popular viewpoints on a lot of things. And therefore, it seems kind of unique to some people, the information that you put out and the viewpoint you have.
Well, being unpopular here, I'll give you an example. This summer, we had a lot of aerial bugs flowing around, you know, bothering people, mosquitoes and such. So I go to this natural food store, and I ask for a natural insect repellent. And she says, well, this is the one that everyone buys. And I said, uh-oh, I don't want that one. And she says, what do you mean? She goes, well, have you met everyone? Have you, you know, do you notice how people behave, what they think and what they say? I don't want the one that they want. I want something better. Right? It's not because you just don't want it because they have it. It's because you got to pursue things that are pleasant and wonderful and just good. Right? And those things exist. So, I think we've covered that. You know, if you mentioned the archives, we did about 18 Sonic episodes plus here and there other things. I've also done things with, AFR after that, another 18, called Uncommon Sense with Seth Michael. Recently did a couple of ad hoc interviews here and there. But you know, one thing that I've always said is it's not time yet, right? So I end up repeating myself, on many topics, and not really going into a lot of depth because it's just not necessary because there is no real demand or audience for it. You know, I have a stock Greek speak, and I think you've heard me steamroll people in private conversations as well. And if I'll recap a couple of them, if you'd like.
Well, that's always interesting. And yeah, you did do those episodes with Seth. And, most recently, I think you were on, with Freeman Fly and, a couple other people, I think. Maybe even an appearance on a round table. I'm not sure. I heard about that, but I didn't hear it myself.
Right.
And yes, it is a little bit repetitious. It's something that, people have affectionately called Greek speak. That's for sure. Some of the information, I found some of the discussions, though, extremely revealing, especially when we started to examine exactly what you were just talking about, which is people's actions and what they really mean. Your participation in what I would consider to be, well, mass tribal rituals and things like this. For instance, we are coming up on what they call the Christmas season, right? Mm-hmm. Now you're already scoffing just a bit.
Hold on. It's the holidays.
Right? Excuse me. Politically correct. We have to be politically
correct.
It's
the holidays.
Right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. In the darkest time of the year, right. Well, you know, here's the thing. Just to interject something. You know, the communication even that we're having here on the internet, people have to remember that most of the things that they're going through is a beta test. Just like when a band is being set up on stage to play, you know, the microphone check, 1, 2, 3. That's not the show. That is just to make sure that everything is working. What humanity's been experiencing in the past century or so are things that are being put in place, for things to come. So, so let's go back to the holidays and things to come. Yeah. Did you want to get into the occult meanings? Anyone can research that pretty easily, and you won't find it to be positive, I guess, would be the note on that subject.
Well, an occult in the most direct sense, because you do mean the hidden meaning, behind things. Now people might say, oh God, are we going to get into a discussion of exactly when Jesus was born and all that? Well, we could.
That's very easy. That's got 3 or 4 layers to it. Right? Because the J-E-S-U-S, the letter J, wasn't invented until the 1500s. So people that profess that can, right? I started around there. So,
yes,
so
precisely.
So it's not biblical. And,
Well, that's one thing. And we could dissect that, but you guys have heard that all over the place. What I appreciated was our discussion about something that people take as a cultural icon at this point, more than a religious symbol. And that is, yes, folks, Santa Claus. Santa Claus is, well, you know, the jolly fat man, right? Dressed in red, and he brings presents for little boys and little girls. And, well, Greek, you know right now I'm being facetious, right? So what is really behind the whole Santa Claus ritual? Because it's strange to observe, isn't it? People all across this country, for sure. I don't know if they do this worldwide. I've heard tell that there are versions of it, but definitely in this alleged country, you know, the artist formerly known as the United States of America, there is a ritual where people bring their children to shopping malls and department stores, although there aren't too many department stores anymore. You know, see your local Walmart. But the thing is that they bring them to these places, and you visit with this jolly fat man, allegedly, in a suit, right, with a beard and all this stuff. And a lot of times you see children terrified, screaming, really petrified by the jolly fat man who's supposed to bring them toys and candy, Greek.
It's revived. You want to make it really simple, and not without sounding pedantic or academic. Mm-hmm. It's the revived Moloch worship, right? M-O-L-E-C-H, or Lord. These were minor lords. We're talking about, it's way too far back for most people, but let's say 2,000-3,000 years ago, a lot of these things gained prominence in what's called, ancient Canaan, ancient Phoenicia, ancient Babylon, parts of Egypt. They had their own variety. And it was all about making a wish of prosperity. Like, for example, the birthday cake. We've gone over what do cannibals, birthdays, and dolls have in common, right? It sounds like an absurd question, but when that's laid out, it's pretty shocking.
Mm-hmm.
But it's all these things, Chuck, just to preface, are what are they doing when they're doing this? They're making a wish of prosperity. Let's just say, go sit on Santa's lap and tell him what you want, right?
Right.
It's for personal gain. When you do the birthday cake, it's make a wish and blow out the candles, right?
Right, and the alleged celebration of the year to come, right? Because you have just turned one or whatever, so you mark the year that's already passed, and now it's you blow out the candles, you make your wish. So your wish is what? Could be anything, but it's usually something yet to come. So still a wish of prosperity, right?
All these ancient. This is the thing, though. These sacrifices are. In the pagan sense, and the word pagan just means ignorant, would be a wish of prosperity, and then you're actually memorializing the event to appease a god or a lord. And I think we've, again, direct anyone to previous discussions we've had. And by the way, thank you. You have mirrored the ones that the archive of Ocelli and the Greek up on a YouTube. I've actually put a link on that on the website, Uncommon Radio. For people, because I've been getting a lot of questions. But we did one about are the gods dead? What is Satanism? And we've discussed how to keep time and the foundation of this Western and Eastern culture is based on. And I think we've come to a loose conclusion that most of these things are based on offerings of children and or human sacrifice, right?
Well, that's the odd part here. Now, somebody might be saying, wait a minute, how did we get from Santa Claus and birthday cakes? And in fact, well, okay, cannibals, you could see being tied to it, but birthday cakes, dolls, Santa Claus, human sacrifice? These are children's things. These are toys. These are wonderful, warm parts of our culture, Greek. How could you tie that?
Well, it's not me. It's just a matter of reporting on it, right? You want to leave yourself out of it. A good reporter tries to be objective.
Well, absolutely.
On a personal note, I tend to avoid those things on a personal note. You know what I mean? But that can't be said by most, right? Most people would say, well, you know, we like to have a good time, right? We like the party.
Right.
But you have to understand several things. There's the reality that not everything that people participate in, think about, or come in contact with, are less than 100 years old. And it was the reality that people are living in. They really don't go back more than a century. If you look at your science, your medicine, the way the religions are structured, economy is structured, the judicial system is structured, very little goes back more than 100 years, right? They tend to think of themselves as modern, but many things, as you know, carry over from previous cultures. And when you study these previous cultures and you look at, for example, what's called the mystic side, meaning the intangible side. You can use the agriculture as a metaphor where what is the most important aspect of something? And in agriculture, it would be the seed. No matter what crop you have to save some seeds so you have another crop next year, right? And let's just, you know, set aside buying seeds for next year. But that was typically it to be self-sustaining, right?
Right.
You grew your crops and you put some seeds aside for next year. With humanity and the mysticism, it was, what is the most important thing for humanity? Well, that's a pretty obvious question. Well, it's for humanity to continue. How does humanity continue? Well, through the practice of copulation and then the bearing of children. That's how humanity continues. Duh, right? Okay, so what is the most important aspect of humanity? It's the children and the sexual organs. So when they were convinced and dabbling with these various minor imps and demons, well, they had to offer to these various imps and demons the best of the best, which is what their continuation hinges on, which is sexual organs and children. And that's why also, just to tie this in, this is something new, perhaps in this aspect of the discussion, it's not only the sacrifice, but it's also the sexual organs and the innuendos, the phallic symbols, the gynec symbols, right? So what they did with these various minor imps and demons is make offerings of children and sex offerings. If, for example, if you look at most of the architecture of what's called religious buildings across the board, whether it's in the Buddhist, Hindu, Christian, Jewish, or Muslim convention or culture, those were initially the structures or the patterns of ancient sex temples. You know, if you look at the domes and the way the architecture is set out and the proportions, and how many people are aware of that today? Very few, but it doesn't mean that it's, you know, not sourced from that, right? So how many people are aware that they're actually performing in parody a revived Moloch child offering when they put the child on the lap of Santa Claus at the local mall? Probably none, maybe very few, right? So, but it doesn't change that fact, you see. Right. Does it?
No, it doesn't. And, you know, it almost sounds like we're off track here, but I know that this is going to tie right back into what we were saying to begin with. Cause now it seems as though we've gone kind of far askew because we started talking about Moloch. We started talking about human sacrifice. Now we're talking about sexuality, but it all actually interrelates rather seamlessly, doesn't it?
Well, here's the one thing. Going into the mind of someone listening to this, either for the first time or hearing it again from this perspective, you know, because just like exercising discernment, if you were to bring something to be assessed, let's say a diamond in a velvet bag, do they just look at it and put it back in the bag, or do you keep rotating it to look at every facet, right? So, and sometimes you might look at it again and see something different. So here, this bears repetition to a degree, but the whole thing is, when you hear something like this, you're like, oh, well, that I don't do that. Well, I don't believe that. And, you know, I haven't heard this before. I'm not too sure. It doesn't matter because it's not the topic that matters, right? What is Santa Claus and all these other things that we've discussed in the past? It's, are you able to objectify what is going on? Right. Like in special forces, they have a motto, I believe, I'm paraphrasing. It says to assess, improvise, overcome. Right. Any situation.
Right.
It could be anything. Changing a flat tire. You know, the lights go out. Cooking a burger in the kitchen. Anything. You know, it's just assess the situation, improvise, and then overcome. That is where people are lacking because they can't get past the first assessment. And they can't get past the first assessment because they lack objectivity. Why do they lack objectivity? I think we've discussed. You ready? I'll bring this up again.
Mm-hmm.
Something called cosmic censorship. Humanity is censored, and this censorship started about 2,500 years ago. And to make it a, sort of a happy ending, in the next duration of a year or two, this censorship is going to begin to be lifted. And that is a wonderful time to be around, right? Because, wow, you know, you'll actually be able to have people that are paying attention. Go figure. But I'd like to indulge one thing. We have the breaks here at every hour, right?
Oh, yes.
Mm-hmm. Let me give you the standard Greek thing. We'll throw this in again. You know how you started the show about what day it was, you know, and you were careful about the date and sort of doing an unconditional thing about it. But, you know, you can't keep time with the Gregorian calendar, what's called the Pope's work schedule. So if someone came to this planet and asked someone, what day is it, and you tell them anything between January and December and Monday through Friday, they're going to shake your head and says, take me to somebody who knows something, you know, is paying attention, right? Because you ever notice how if someone observes a day of the week on a year, whether it's an anniversary or whatever event, it's a different day of the week next year or the year before? Mm-hmm. You see, this is a work schedule, right? For thousands of years, people kept time using the astronomical bodies because you don't have to buy anything. And no one has to tell you what day it is. You can examine it yourself, right? Like the moon rules the month and the sun rules the day. So why is there no discussion on this? You ever wonder? Right?
Well, that's the interesting thing. And this is why, in fact, every single show, I open it by saying that, you know, this is allegedly the day according to that thing we call a calendar. Now, anybody out there would say, well, what are you talking about? Again, and you were saying that,
they're stuck.
Right.
Yeah, they can't. It's very simple. Just the very fact that whatever date you look on today, you think it was the 30th of November, it's what they call a Woden's Day. Last year it was probably a Monday. Next year it's probably going to be a Thor's Day. Which day is it? It's none. And no one at all is paying any attention. And you could look back a little bit in history and see that the moon rules the month, the sun rules the day. There is no such thing as the Earth solar year. There's no such thing as a lunar calendar. All these things are nonlinear, but when you put the sun and the moon together, you get a perfect linear function. And this is how time was kept, right? And so timekeeping, you watch society, you watch at the things that are very plain. And they still, you know, even people that consider themselves to be evolved or awake, you bring up the subject and it's just like, oh, I don't know what you're talking about. All right, just walk away. You know, sorry, calm down. Have a little more Kool-Aid and you'll be fine.
Mm.
The thing is, these discussions will be more prevalent in the near future. How about the other one, Chuck? You ever notice when it's when you heat or cool a room indoors, the heat goes to the ceiling and the cold goes to the floor, doesn't it? Whether you're heating or cooling. But,
well, that's the idea, yeah.
Well, yeah, that's what you perceive. But, you know, if you go out into nature in the valley, it's hot. And if you go up to the mountaintop, it's cold. And if you go in an airplane towards the sun, which is allegedly a heat source, it gets colder and colder and colder. And, you know, if you called a medical technician and he said, my feet are cold and my head is hot, well, you know, heat's supposed to rise, cold's supposed to go down, they tell you you're not feeling well. And no one's paying any attention that in all living biological systems – you have a rarefied ascending cold, and you have a densifying descending heat. Now, why aren't the people – this is pretty clear to notice. In a natural living system, the heat and cold go in opposite directions, right, than if you're burning a campfire or whatever, degenerating something. So why aren't the people going to their entitled classes known as engineers, heating, electric, and heating, cooling, and all that, and saying, hey, why don't you guys design like heating and cooling systems for the cars, the boats, the planes, and the houses so we have an ascending cold and a descending heat? Why don't you engineer the device to do that so this way we're not walking around with a hot head and cold feet all year round? And how many people are going to university and all this and asking, hey, why don't you design a system? How many? If you said none, yeah, it's pretty close.
Right.
Now, we're not talking about, like, hidden meanings of things now, right? We're talking about – we brought up the calendar. You can't keep time with it. It's pretty obvious. And you notice that the energies in the environment are very drastic from degenerating, destructive. You know, when you burn something, the heat goes up, right? But when things that are living, the heat goes down. So how obvious is this, right? This is pretty plain. Mm-hmm. You know, and you hear discussion on the economic system and money, but yet people carry these things in their cards. Are they wallets? Are they called money cards or are they called credit cards? Is it a credit-based economy or is it a money-based? You see, everything is in front, and I'm just waiting for people to notice not the 800-pound gorilla in the room, but the 15 800-pound gorillas in the room. And if they can't see them or hear them, why can't they at least smell them? Because gorillas have like this weird sulfur kind of smell, right?
Right.
Now I'm talking about gorillas, not monkeys, because monkeys tend to generally throw poop at you, right? So anyway, that's a metaphor. But the point here is no one is paying any attention. And when I say no one, I mean statistically.
Right.
So how are you going to bring up a topic and have people act on it, which is fine, you know, to direct one's energy to change something or do something better or worse or whatever, when on the way they're going to be stifled and not paying attention to anything around them anyway? It's so hypocritical to say that they're going to be able to make things better or worse if they can't even notice the most basic things in reality. Now, whether these things that we mentioned appear to be illusionary or real, that's up to one's perception again. But there's a level of hypocrisy within humanity right now that they're discussing about going and climbing the Himalayas while they're sitting in Chicago and they don't even want to get up off the couch. Let's say.
Right, yes.
Just get active where you are. You know, just stick out your arms. If they go out about 4, 5, 6 feet in every direction, are you fully aware and in command of what is going on around you? And the answer is very clearly no. So that's why when you look at whether it's political, economic, judicial, entertainment, scientific, religious, what is put out to the people is probably less than trivial, superficial, and emotional, because they can't notice anything at this point. Now, if you continue down this path, of course, you will notice publicly, if you speak this way, even bringing up things that could help people, you will not have an audience. You will lose the audience. So there is no audience for this type of talk at this point, or information or conversation. I'd say the audience is so small that it's almost not worth, you know, doing a broadcast for it, which goes back to some of the reasons why we kept everything limited. So with that, I'm going to yield. I think we threw in a general roundabout thing about any topic being viewed. Are you really looking at it, right? And before you get into, before you get into esoteric things like politics, religion, the judiciary, or whatever, you don't even understand the energies affecting your own body, right? So how are you going to, you know, so the thing is, if you're in a pleasant situation, I always tell people, so what do we do, Greek? What advice would you give? I said, well, pursue things that are pleasant. Pursue things that are helpful. I always tell people, you know, if half the people in the world helped just one person, that would take care of the whole world, wouldn't it?
Well, wouldn't it? Yes. That's
right.
You know, and that goes to, because some people who used to listen to what we did didn't find it all that helpful when I would say something like, the smallest act of kindness, if encouraged among the population, if each of us went out of our way to simply do that on a daily basis, to act kindly towards someone, to make the smallest of efforts. It's not necessarily a financial thing. It's not necessarily a material thing. Who knows? But if you did that, those acts of kindness, if encouraged and if done on a mass scale, would literally reshape the entire interaction that we witness at this time. And right. And some people said, you know, well, that's ridiculous considering what.
Well, just even offering a foot rub, man, that helps, you know. So, yeah.
There you go. Well, that's one way, you know.
All right, but, yeah, okay. Yeah, I just don't think, but here's the thing. I brought up, since we did the Sonic thing together, I've made a lot of other points, discussing like how you're being pranked, right? Society is, everything is just a prank, which etymologically a prank just means a ludicrous trick. And if you ask someone who is pranking someone, why did you do that? They say, I don't need a reason. I just feel like it, right? I mean, if you ever dealt with any kind of anyone in the legal society, an attorney, so-called law enforcement, a judge, oh, we don't go by any law. We just do it because we can. You know, if you ever deal with a medical person, it's the same thing. Or even a spiritual, quote-unquote, person in the religion, any of the religions, they're like that too. Well, I don't need to define or know anything about this. I'll just, you know, either believe it or not. You know, it's all this pranking, right, is going on. So how, when you, I just had to throw this in, Chuck, because we just brought up the concept of helping other people, but how are you going to weed through all the pranking that's going on, right? I mean, you have children that are being pranked while they're still in the crib or in the cradle by the parents. So you're in really bad shape as a group of people from that perspective, right? You know what I mean by the pranking. We'll tie it back into telling children lies like Tooth Fairy, Santa Claus, and all this other stuff.
Oh,
and there's,
yes.
And there's no apology, you know, dressing them up in costumes for Halloween or whatever. Or how, my favorite prank that I like to record, not that it's favorite, it's actually pretty disgusting, is how many times have you heard a parent said, we know that the public school system or the school system, private school system or university doesn't teach you anything, but you have to do it because I went through it. How many times have you heard something like that, right? So the level of pranking, people have been set off while they're still in the cradle, and then you get thrown into the religious convention of pranking. You get it thrown into the judicial, the economic, right? The medical is pranking as well. So the thing is to help someone or a society, if you help enough people, there's a society of these help people, let's say, how are you going to mitigate the pranking that begins when they're still in swaddling clothes? Not going to happen. So what do? You sit back and wait for the changes and wait for the time is right to communicate what can be communicated to help. But another thing I want to just invite you to consider, I was looking for this book. It's regarding transmutations of materials. It was written by Gustave Le Bon, 1895. And it was, what made it more interesting is that this book was on the FBI seizure list, right? So if anyone had it in their possession or was in the library, you know, the FBI would come around and take it. And there is such a thing, by the way. So, in looking for some of his writings, I came across something he wrote called The Crowd in 1895. And what he did was he objectified how a crowd is created. You know, just a crowd of people, a movement.
Right.
And there's an audiobook on YouTube. It's about 6 hours long. It's on PDF. You can read it. It's very interesting. But just to make a short note about Gustave Le Bon and the crowd mentality, the way you organize a crowd or a crowd is organized is under a thought, an idea, an inspiration. It could be religious, political, what have you, right? And typically, he states that most of the people that form these crowds are imbecilic or moronic in nature because they pretty much give up all of their personal self to join this crowd. Now, in order for these crowds to form under these ideas, they have to be simplified and oversimplified. And when you oversimplify them, most of these crowds are formed under concepts that are so oversimplified that the motive no longer represents the original concept. That's right. Why when you ever hear of like activists or protesters, right, you go there and you talk to these people, ask them, what are you protesting? And they'll blah, 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 blah. And you're like, wait a second. You do cursory research on what they're talking about, and you won't find that anything is really – there's no substance behind it. It's this emotional grabbing on of movement. You know. So this is what all these things are based on. There was an election in the U.S. about making America great again. Great at what? You don't have to, you don't have to say anything. You see,
because I was so waiting while you're talking about pranksters and you're talking about the crowd mentality and all that. I really would love to hear your viewpoints on the the man who is now swamping the drain instead of drinking the swamp.
Well, here's the thing. I like to leave my viewpoint on it, and I can try to give you some objective analysis. How's that?
Well, right? That's all I would expect from you, Greek.
Well, here's the thing. If you're going down the road and it's real bumpy and you get out and someone says you have a flat tire, well, thanks for your viewpoint. And you look at it and you see the tire's flat. Well, that's another viewpoint. And the guy across the street says it's a flat tire. It's another viewpoint. You know, so maybe do all these viewpoints come together and make objectivity? They could, if it's clear that you have a flat tire. But this is a little more beyond that, because when you're talking about a leader of a nation, what are you talking about? You're talking about a leader of a nation. So what is a nation? Well, we've discussed every country, every nation in the world has a patron or matron deity, meaning a god that's over it. In this country, it happens to be the revived goddess religion. She's personified as justice or justicia. It's a goddess religion. She's blindfolded with scales. They have statues of her everywhere, known as Columbia and such. In England, it's Britannia, right? Mm-hmm. It has nothing to do with law. It never did. You brought to justice, you served justice as a miscarriage of justice. It's the revived goddess religion. So then, right there, there's an 800-hour recitation on what do you know about the ancient goddess religions. And if most people say nothing, that's absolutely true, because no one really wants to look at these things. So you have a country whose matron deity is the goddess revived religion. It's a very specific one also. What do you know about that? Nothing. Okay, fine. Let's go to the next thing. Let's try to objectify further. Most of these politicians, what do they carry their platform on? The safety and security, meaning no war, you have peace, and economic stability of a country.
I'm sorry. Now, none of these things can these alleged leaders even begin to assure the people that they can secure for them.
Sure. So in other words, you're under – so the thing is to – when you say – and also, by the way, this is for those who have ears to hear. When you hear the word security being bandied around, right, it has nothing to do with being peaceful, you know, like – versus the opposite of, you know, security would be, let's say, insecure. Or it has to do with financials, right? Security actually means paper, because it's a credit-based economy. It's commercial paper they're talking about. But the other thing is economic. Has any of these leaders ever, since FDR talked about it being a credit-based economy and defining it? No, no one at all. And here, let's just throw in an objective thing here. This might lose some of the audience or maybe be gainful to others. Do you know there was a little bit of a platform talking about what's called illegals being deported and such, right?
Oh, yes, of course.
Well, that's never going to happen because it's a credit-based economy, right? Why do I say that? Chuck, all right, wipe everything for a second. We go to a casino, and you've got some coin in your pocket, what they call cash or whatever. You can't use that. You've got to go to the cashier and get chips, don't you?
That's right.
And they usually got the name of the casino, whatever, whatever. Now, when you leave that casino, you know, you got to cash them in or whatever, right? Okay. When you're born into a country that has a credit-based economy, it's not debt-based, folks. And by the way, there's not one economist on the internet that's talking properly about this. It's just pathetic. But go back to it. When you're born into a credit-based economy, you are given a credit line in order to operate, right? It's when you're born, they birth you. It's a set of things that are put together. You could represent it by the birth certificate, social security card. So there's a term security, right? Mm-hmm. So this is how it works. So for example, you cross the border. How does this credit line come about? Well, the first thing is, are you alive or are you dead? Right? Live birth. You know, you've heard of that certificate.
Right. The live birth.
So the person crosses into the country illegally. They start getting him to sign papers, and they structure a credit line around it. And there's almost no limit to what this credit line can be. And every agency, including the financial agencies and the Treasury, and every agency that ever gets in touch with this person gets some credit from that credit line. But the person who has the credit line, like you or I or anyone, doesn't know about it. But everybody else. So the thing is, how do you get the people's credit without letting them know they have an infinite credit? Because then once they find out, they're going to want it too, right?
Right.
So you charge them with crimes. You have them sign applications for credit, right? You have them do all these things. You know, like children in school, you know, when they take attendance for children in school, those attendance folders or documents are monetized. They take credit out of the child's, right? So let me ask you, the more people that come into the country and have the ability to sign their name on anything, credit lines are created. Why now? Do you think the bankers would approve of sending millions of people away, and with their credit, you know, no more credit lines, or do we want more credit lines to be created? We want more credit lines to be created on their side. How come this isn't being discussed? Now, everything I just said could be found out very easily, but there is a very careful spiritual problem. It could be called mind control or what have you. And you'll see on the internet, it say, oh, it's a debt-based economy. No, I don't see it. How could that be? Because there's no money.
Well, let me put it to you this way. It certainly feels like a debt-based economy to people that are attempting to navigate through the system, right?
Well, because they're in touch with pranksters known as attorneys and debt collectors. These are pranksters. If anyone says you have a debt, prove it. Prove it. They can't. You know, these are all the entitled classes, your religious people, you know, whether any religion, the imams, priests, ministers, rabbis, those are pranksters. The attorneys, judges, police, pranksters, doctors. You ever go to a medical doctor? He wants to strap a cuff on your arm to get your blood pressure. It's like, geez, Louise, there's no pressure in the body. What the hell are you doing? You have to, you know, so this is all pranking over and over and over. So you're so engrossed in pranking, you don't know which way to look. So your path of least resistance is to grab on a bit of information that might offer some relief. Oh, it's a debt-based economy. That's why. No, it's not. It can't be because you could look at the mechanisms in place. But anyway, see how it's very, this is not like sitcom TV one-liners. You can't bring up a topic like, you said, discuss the election, let's say, and now we got into the economic side about how he's talking about, let's say, releasing or sending back quote-unquote illegals, how it's not going to happen, and the reason why. The reason why many things are happening are not these one-liners. Well, I believe, or I don't know, or whatever, we'll see, you hear. The explanations require minutes to hours and are founded, by the way, right? You can look into it, but no one wants to look into it because being baseless is the time period still for being baseless. But again, let's go back to the Trump thing. You're not going to get rid of it. A lot of these things are not going to be fulfilled because people forget that it's a credit-based economy. A lot of the things are not going to change or not be what they think they are because you have a matron deity or a god that rules over you that you suggest, you know, is your matron. You know what I mean by a patron or matron deity, right? It's each nation has one over them. Because people don't know what the goddess religion is about. So if you know what the ancient revived goddess religion is about, you know the future of a country. It's pretty simple. If you understand how the credit system works, anything economic, any discussion that's economic, you can pretty much add it up and see that if what they're discussing is in line with how a credit-based economy works, and you'll see that it's not. So all these, going back to Gustave Le Bon's, the crowd mentality, Gustave Le Bon, I think he uses the word imbecile and moron 700 times in the book, and he's using it very accurately, you know, what the word means. It's not a put-down, right? It just means someone who doesn't know anything about that particular subject.
Well, and these were diagnostic assessments of people's mental capacities at the time he was writing. I mean, this is literally not just an expletive or a pejorative term, I mean to say, at that time. So quite honestly, when he was describing an imbecile, he had a particular range of one's ability to understand the world around them, their aptitude precisely. He had a particular range in mind when he used those words.
Sure. Well, you know, the imbecile, I think they define it as the mentality stops at around 12 years old. I say it's around 8 because if your mentality stopped at around 12, that would be equivalent of having 14 PhDs. I don't know when's the last time you had a conversation with a PhD college professor with a tenure. Their brain stopped working around the third grade. But anyway, that's maybe too personal there. But so the thing is what you're seeing, and also, you know, we've discussed from a prophetic side what is coming to this, let's say the Americas or the Western world, it's going to be playing second fiddle to a revived Middle East Union as it was, let's say, when mankind first started out. You hear about all the seven wonders of the world and that part of it, right? Yeah. So you have a progression. And here's the other thing. There's a gentleman that's out that has a really good testimony, and he spent hours and hours on radio, hundreds of hours, discussing on how the Americans lost World War II. But because – and actually everything that he says is validatable, believe it or not, regarding that subject matter. And the thing is that when you – the finale of a world war is not like playing checkers. It's more like playing chess. Right. Where there's, you know, much more depth in the movement of the pieces, right? So the whole outcome of World War II, the Americans were shown to be propagandizing, especially their own people, that they won because they were the largest economic market in the world. Also, there was a huge investment of other countries in what's called the U.S. dollar. And when a nation is declared to have lost a campaign, you know what happens to their currency, right? It's zeroed out. Right? So, for example, Hirohito had the equivalent of billions in Swiss bank accounts in American dollars. What do you think would have happened to that if the Americans admitted losing the war? Would have been zeroed out and would have impoverished a large sector of that political economy. So once you understand that, then you start to see, let's say, manufacturing is not only done in Asia now, but now the wealth is being kept there. You notice there's almost been like a retraction from the Western market. So that is an explanation. So the reason I threw that in, it might sound a little esoteric, is because there's more understanding that's required. Now, it doesn't mean that you have to go spend a lifetime or half a lifetime researching this, but seek out those who have done and thank them for all the work they've done, right?
Well, and this actually puts the idea of the diplomatic dollar post World War II into into a better place for people to understand what actually happened there, because it seems strange that this was the great benefit to the alleged American economy, the fact that greater lines of credit were extended to other nations directly as a result of the outcome from the military conflict, right? Of course, all under the guise of rebuilding from the devastation that was loosed upon each of the nations, so on and so forth. But the fact that we gave away money actually produced more credit at home.
Right.
And that's why it's good.
Well, I say right, but it's the birth rate was up, which actually creates more money, but eventually it drops the value of the money. I was once present with one of the vice presidents of the Federal Reserve Bank. There's 12 banks, and each bank has about 6 or 7 vice presidents. This was the New York one, and we were discussing the American currency versus the euro. Remember, in the late 90s, the euro was really kicking the dollar in the ass. And he said, it's very simple. The Europeans are having fewer babies than the Americans. Right. Mm. It has nothing to do with debt or anything. You know, the more of something you have, it's like adding water to the soup. It loses its value. Right. That's why you hear a lot of problems with the Chinese, let's say, and the American Treasury. When Geithner was treasurer, I believe he was going back and forth to China twice a year. You could see that in the media. It's right. Because they had 1 billion birth certificates they wanted to put on the market, and they were told to hold them back. Right? Well, you know, most countries will produce tens of millions of birth certificates, not 1 billion, let's say, right?
Mm-hmm.
So what would that do, right? So people, and here's the thing, you want to jump around prophetically, let's say we talk scripturally. You ready for this, Chuck?
Sure.
And before I say it, how many times have you tried to bring up the, anything, let's say, how electricity works or how the money system works, and people go cross-eyed and they tell you halfway, you know, I don't understand what you're talking about, even though it's simple. Well, let's go back this prophetically. You ready? And I've never said this. Actually, I've said it before, I think on maybe a roundtable or with Freeman. People will never understand how the money system works, even all the way till the society ends. This is part of the cosmic censorship. But prophetically, there is going to come a time where people will stop using it, right? It doesn't mean that they're going to understand it. So whenever you're trying to have a discussion regarding, let's say, how electricity works, what is it, how the money system works, what is it, who the gods are, what is it, just if they say, hey, I don't quite get it or whatever, just it's fine. There's nothing you can do about it.
Well, and this all boils down to something that, honestly, in the 18 episodes, I don't think we adequately defined what you mean by cosmic censorship. We gave examples of it, that's for sure. But I think this is one of those things where people hear it and they say, well, what does that actually mean? Now,
self-explanatory.
It seems self-explanatory, but I don't think so. I don't think so. I think it's one of those things that's very difficult for people to wrap their minds around because they somehow have this idea that they must suspend many of their other belief systems, for lack of a better word, in order to embrace this idea. But I don't think so. The fact that there is a grand censorship program in place,
yes,
which is embedded in all languages, in all of the religious corridors, in all of the political corridors, is blatantly obvious to someone like me. Do I know what to do about it? Do I know how to deal with it? Do I know how to break the program? No. I don't.
No, you can't, because we're the frogs in the pot. Okay, here's another way to explain cosmic censorship.
Okay.
You heard about boiling the frog. You know, if you turn up the heat too fast, he jumps out. And you can't just throw him back in the pot. You have to start all over again.
Right.
You got to start with a fresh, cold pot of water, because you won't sit in it if it's hot now, right, or warm. And then you gradually bring it up again. If there have been certain changes in humankind where the frog jumped out of the pot, mankind became aware of mastering his physical reality. When I say his physical reality, meaning he's got to go from headquarters, being the body, out. You know how the body works, and then you understand how everything around you works. And then if you get enough people like that together, there is pretty much nothing you can't do. And that would have disturbed. There is a time period in place that man is to spend being agricultural, industrial, doing what people do. And when these things had happened back in the past, you had something called the flood. You had the Tower of Babel, let's say. You have many – every culture has a story somehow of how the gods came down and stopped man from doing something.
Mm-hmm.
You've heard of the Titan Prometheus that gave man fire and he was punished. Okay. It goes through every culture, Eastern and Western. There are things that where society was not ready, or the gods did not permit it to move forward. Around 2,500 years ago, apparently, it appears a decision was made. Instead of allowing man free thought or free reign of thought, and then to exercise the thought into physical reality, the decision apparently, it seems, was made to just block him mentally. Right? So he can't learn. He can't really see what's going on the subtleties and how the gods operate. And that happened around 2,500 years ago, let's say between 700 BC and 400 BC. Let's give that 300-year opening. I call it the axial period. It's when the veil came down on mankind, where before that, give you an example. If you were around 2,500 years ago in any culture to anyone, you ask them about where humanity came from. What, you know, who are the gods? What is this? They all pretty much had access to that information. Around 2,500 years ago, most of the depositories of information were removed from public view. Like, have you heard of the burning of the Library of Alexandria, right?
Of course.
That happened around that time period. Most of the temples that you see today, still in ruins, were destroyed around that time to a certain degree. Most of the religions that you see today in place still emerged around that time. Most of the philosophies you see in place today emerged in that time to be a distraction. Very interesting. It is called an axial period. And an axial period can be defined that it changes worldview. We just recently had one 15 years ago. Have you heard the term? Now it's a post-9/11 world. 9/11 was a mini axial period, not so mini actually, because it actually has affected. It's international. It's not.
I constantly reference the fact that we are in the post 9/11 reality. That's how I describe it.
It's an axial. Yeah, an axial event or actual period, any time after that, right, changes worldview. So the worldview was changed around 2,500 years ago, and you're still in it right now, but it's going to change again very soon.
Yeah, I absolutely believe it is coming to an end very soon. But as we get ready to go into the first hour break, I do want to say that in the next hour, I hope that we will cover something that you and I, we have agreed on just about everything you talked about up to this point. I'm not saying that I fully comprehend every single thing, but you and I can walk in step with each other on a lot of this stuff. However, when we get into the concept of what we call the law, we may have a difference of opinion. And I never really examined this with you on the show we did together. but I think it might be something worthy of doing now. Of course, I also saw a note in my Skype, aren't you offended that he said that a pagan is someone who is ignorant, and meanwhile you identify yourself as a pagan. No, because I do know that the Greek is not actually talking about me, although I do recognize my own ignorance. And although we have not heard from Sherry Wisdom very much in the first hour, she is still with us, my co-host on a Wednesday, and one of the most fascinating guests that anybody can get on a talk show, in my estimation anyway, my humble opinion. The Greek is with me, and we will get even deeper into this in the second hour on the Ocelli Effect. Stay tuned to American Freedom Radio, because we will be right back.
Institution.
American Freedom Radio.
Are you feeling embarrassed and stuck because you can't focus or concentrate? I have a confession to make. I spent years unable to think clearly, like I was in a fog. I was going through the motions, running my companies, and I hated feeling groggy and mentally sluggish. I couldn't get ahead like this. It's no secret, the powers that be want us dumbed down. Chemicals, fluoride, our brains are under siege and we are experiencing lower IQs. But now there's a weapon to fight back and win. Introducing DNA Evolve, a revolutionary breakthrough in a category of cognitive enhancers called nootropics. I've been using DNA Evolve and couldn't feel better. For me, it works. It feels great to get things done again and get ahead. Try a free sample for yourself at DNAEvolveSample.com. That's DNAEvolveSample.com. Supplies are limited, so go to DNAEvolveSample.com right now.
Did you know there are 3 million edible food plants on Earth, and none have the nutritional value of the hemp plant? HempUSA.org offers you hemp protein powder. It does not contain chemicals or THC, is non-GMO, and is 100% gluten-free. Hemp protein powder burns fat, builds muscle, contains 53% protein, and feeds the body the nutrients it needs. Call 888-910-4367 and see what our powder, seeds, and oil can do for you. Only at HempUSA.org. HempUSA.org introduces 3 brand new detox formulations of micro plant powder. Brain Fuel for depression, bipolar disorders, and stress. Total Care, anti-cancer agent that cleans the liver and organs and increases memory. Rejuvenate, invigorates and heals the body, mind, and spirit. These products are your alternative to pharmaceuticals. Call 888-910-4367 and like us on Facebook. We ship worldwide. Only at HempUSA.org.
This is Rick Simpson, and you're listening to American Freedom Radio.
The world is like a ride at an amusement park, and when you choose to go on it, you think it's real, because that's how powerful our minds are. And the ride goes up and down and round. It has thrills and chills, and it's very brightly colored, and it's very loud, and it's fun for a while. Some people have been on the ride for a long time, and they begin to question, is this real, or is this just a ride? And other people have remembered, and they come back to us, and they say, hey, don't worry, don't be afraid, ever, because this is just a ride, and we kill those people. The eyes of fear want you to put bigger locks on your door, buy guns, close yourself off. The eyes of love instead see all of us as one. Here's what we can do to change the world right now to a better ride. Take all that money we spend on weapons and defense each year and instead spend it feeding, clothing, and educating the poor of the world, which it would many times over, not one human being excluded, and we can explore space together, both inner and outer, forever in peace.
What has American Freedom Radio ever done for us? provide us with free education?
Well, that's obviously effective, but apart from reversing the dumbing down of America...
All the information they provide is free?
What about the free podium for broadcast activists to speak from, man?
Exploiting commonplace corruption?
They help vulnerable people who don't have a voice?
Bringing light to important information nobody else does. Or they never censor, hang up, or cut off their guests?
Well, that's not fun, is it?
Oh, they created a fantastic alternative media source during an era of bad, manipulative, and infiltrated mainstream and alternative media shows and scum.
Okay, well, apart from the free education, free information, free podium for broadcast activists to speak from, exposing commonplace corruption, helping vulnerable people without a voice, bringing light to important information nobody else does, and creating a fantastic commercial-free alternative media source in a sea of bad, manipulative mainstream and alternative media shills and scum, what has American Freedom Radio ever done for us?
Donate to American Freedom Radio today.
No rules. No rules. No taboo topics.
No taboo topics.
No fear of doom.
No fear of doom.
We are.
We are.
American Freedom Radio.
American Freedom Radio.
Okay, can we get quiet, please? Everybody sit down. Young man in the front row, spit that gum out. Thank you. Cherry flavor. And now, the moment we've been waiting for. The man whom we all know and have grown to love over the years. Who won the Nobel Peace Prize for making the largest flavored Jell-O shooter that the world has ever seen. And a great man of science who proved to us once and for all that no matter how much cherry-flavored Jell-O you put in your swimming pool, you still can't walk on water. I give to you, Chuck O'Kelly!
So the second hour begins on the O'Kelly Effect, broadcast live on AmericanFreedomRadio.com. Of course, the honorary executive producer for tonight is Megan, and we do appreciate all of your support at O'Kelly.com. That is O-C-H-E-L-L-I.com. Tonight's discussion is definitely something different from what I usually do, although, as we have already referenced, I used to do this quite often with the gentleman called The Greek. And we are getting deep into Greek speak tonight for sure. And along for the ride is my co-host, Sherry Wisdom. Sherry, I don't want to ask your thoughts just yet, but how you feeling about this so far?
I actually am pleasantly surprised at how much I agree with a lot of what is being said. Not all of it. But a lot of it, to me, it goes right along with what I talk about on my own show, what we talk about here, how my practice works, all of that. So I get it. I think that there's some redefining, at least from my point of view, that I'd like to at least throw out there and see what the Greek has to say and take it from there whenever you're ready.
Well, obviously, you know, the Greek inspires people to have these discussions. I've heard it privately. We've done it on air, that cause people to almost sound like they're challenging one another, when in reality, even the language is confounding us. That sounds familiar. But, bottom line here, let's talk about some things that are a little bit different real quick before I basically just turn the mic over to Sherry. I gotta say that all up to this point, Greek, of course, I'm in agreement with you about the majority of what you've said. I find it extremely fascinating that you have put it in such an easily understood, okay, vernacular for everyone to follow. And that's great. I have this odd disagreement with you though, and I never did really explore it with you on the show, but tonight, let's get to it. The law which comes from the deity. Now, I understand how that works on a day-to-day basis. I get it. But it seems to me as though, as a presentation of the creator, okay, and I'm not going to get into the arguments about the hierarchy of the gods. I am not going to do that, although you and I could have that discussion. We have had that discussion. And being that we are in the position we're in, all of us, the listeners, myself, I believe, you know, this again is my opinion. Being that we're in the position we're in, I don't think we are capable at this time of fully understanding the bureaucracy, for lack of a better word, that may be in place here regarding creation. But let's put that aside. It seems to me that much like a remote control for a television set, quite often the instructions might actually be imprinted on the product itself. I think that it is fully possible and understandable for someone to glean from their own design a great many things which are fit and proper, which are, in fact, that are in fact completely consistent with that which I would understand as universal law. I think that this is imprinted in us. I think that this is part of our design, in fact. And I know that you may not quite see it that way, but after all, let's go at your view on the law, and if you want to address what I just said, feel free.
Well, let's just say this. I'll just address what you said regarding the imprinting, and that's correct. You know, I think we have I'll stick to the basics. In terms of where we are in human society, right, I think do you remember the architectural metaphor? 1,000 years ago, when public structures were erected, they were to last 1,000 years, and many are still standing. 100 years ago, if you look at many of the skyscrapers in lower Manhattan, for example, or mid-Manhattan, Empire State Building and such are almost 100 years old. They're still quite robust. Today, when these large skyscrapers are being built, they have, you could look this up, they're underwritten with a life expectancy of 20 years. As a matter of fact, I was conveying on a road recently, and I saw a subdivision of houses going up, and they were actually building the houses out of compressed sawdust. Kid you not.
Yep.
They get sawdust and compress it into these panels. Now, so you notice how the duration of these structures that man puts his efforts in has been decreasing. So how can that happen by random so consistently? It's not random, because there seems to be a program that everyone understands that it's fine. How many times have you heard people protesting, why are we building houses out of sawdust, and why is that big giant tower only a 20-year life expectancy? How many people are protesting that? None. Because everyone seems to be going along with this equal understanding that there's not a lot of time left, meaning on the way we do things. So why build, you know, it doesn't have to be built to last, because the way we understand things and the way we've been doing things is going to be short-lived, right? So you see all of these things. There's a contrast, though, with what I call HQ. HQ is headquarters, let's say initials, right? What's your headquarters? It's your body. It's made up of a soul. It's made up of a spirit. It's made up of a body. If you don't know how your body works, and if you don't know what the soul and the spirit are, well, you're either ignorant or deceived about HQ. Now, if HQ is just full of inaccuracy, ignorance, or deception, what will come out of HQ?
Well, direction, right? That'll be completely
ignorant, deception, and deceptive,
yes.
Right. So if you look at most of the criticisms on society today, especially what's considered mainstream convention, it can be labeled as being deceptive, right? Yeah, ignorant and such. So I think that before you get into law, or anyone gets into law, they might have to want to examine what we call the container, right? Remember that?
Oh, yes.
And the container is the body that contains the soul and the spirit. Now, here, I'm just going to preface this, and this is a personal comment. I have yet to meet a religious person, a quote-unquote spiritual person, and any group of any caliber that can define the soul and the spirit. And I have yet to meet any medical technician, doctor, or such that can define the container, the physical body. Mm-hmm. Now, and this is not because it's a definition that I agree with or I like. It's just what's been memorialized by all those ignorant people that came before us. Now, I've noticed that one thing that gets me is that people today like to take craps and piss on all the graves of everyone who came before them. because no one seems to be examining what's been memorialized before what has come before us. And let's just throw this in before we get into law and the gods. You ever notice the PSY prefix, like psychology, psychotic, psychic, PSY? Whenever that comes in the English language, that is based on the Greek word psyche, PSY prefix, and it has to do with the mind. Well, the word psyche in Greek means the spirit and the mind are intangible. It's what makes you, you. It's what drives you, right? You ever notice, anything that has to do with the movement of air has a PNU prefix, like pneumatic or pneumonia? Well, pneuma in Greek, believe it or not, means air or breath. So that is the simplest definition that anyone can access. Now here's the interesting thing, Chuck. You ready for accessing things and reference points?
Sure.
Is that even in the reference documents, they don't want to show this. Because once you get a firm grip on what the spirit and the soul is, and then understand the body, who can stop anyone? Who can stop you? Mm. No one. How can you be controlled if you know who you are? If headquarters is together, have you ever heard of the book Sun Tzu, The Art of War?
Absolutely.
Mm. If you're going to paraphrase what that book is about, is, man, you got to get your shit together before you go out and pick a fight, right?
Exactly. you know what? Thank you for bringing it down to the very bare minimum. You boiled it down perfectly. That's exactly what Sun Tzu basically says. You know,
right.
Is have everything in order before you go marching.
It better be better than your opponent, right?
That's
now,
right.
Now, here's the thing. If you have ordnance that is so incredibly beyond what everyone else has, you're not going to fight, because then it's like going out and stomping on a bunch of ants, right?
Mm-hmm.
And if you are a benevolent creature, why would you do that? You know, if you show up to a knife fight with a machine gun, why would you unload? Why?
You don't have to.
Everybody stops. Yeah. So the point is, the point is right now, all you see is knife fights and you've got a machine gun. What do? You walk away. Right? And this is what's going on. You ever hear of secret societies? Right?
Oh, of course.
Like they've got, okay, what do you think they're doing? They're not showing what's going on, and it's the most basic of the basic things. Headquarters. I'll give you another example about the body, and we've gone, the body's very simple. You know, when I go out into the shops in public, and you know, even like the supermarkets, they have a pharmaceutical section, and they have this chair you sit in, you put some coins, and it gives you your blood pressure, right, allegedly.
Right.
And I always ask them, behind the counter, I stop there, and I ask very seriously, I say, how can I get one of these, you know, pointing at the blood pressure device? And they're like, oh, whatever, we rent it or whatever. I says, why? They ask me why, usually. And I say, well, because I'm opening a museum on medical fakery and quackery, and I'd like this to be the premier showcase piece. And no one ever says, well, why? You know, they all just kind of look at me real serious, like they're in a daze, like they're completely censored, right? Because there is no blood pressure in the body, right? It's a joke, and it's a prank, and everyone's going along with it. I mean, there's millions of people on blood pressure medication. It's really, really sad. So that's what I mean about being deceived about the body. And then you ask any spiritualist, or, by the way, you ever heard of the term psychiatrist? What that literally means is spiritualist, because the PSY means spirit, right, or mind. So how can we go indulge in a public open conversation regarding any matter that is outside of the core essence of humanity, which is the body, the soul, and the spirit, when those things are not only are they not defined, but they don't want to be defined? You see, the problem with humanity is not ignorance. That could be fixed. If you don't know how to fly an airplane and you're ignorant of it, well, you know what? You can be trained to do such. But if you don't know how to fly an airplane and you say, you know what? I don't know how to fly an airplane, and I really don't want to know how to fly an airplane, and I don't care. Well, now you're completely outside of the realm of any possibility of any progress in that direction, right?
Yeah. That's
so
true.
Most people that consider themselves to be spiritually minded, ask them what to define the spirit and the soul, and you will hear the biggest crock of crap for an hour. And if you show them how simple it is, nope, can't be that. Sorry. All right, you just keep moving on. Why? Because the time isn't right. It's just the time isn't right. You have to, how many times have you heard it's the right time for something, right? And, you know, let's say you have a Microsoft Windows computer. You go back and have a discussion 100 years ago about that. Well, you say Microsoft, they'll say, well, it's small and it's soft. Okay. And I know what computing is because we do that on paper. We have slide rules. And I know what Windows are. But you know what, dude? I don't know what the hell you're talking about.
Yeah, that's true. Computation existed long before the, you know, the thing we call air quotes computer. That's for sure. So,
abacus.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Abacus. The abacus,
so,
right.
Nine places. So when is this time coming regarding the subject of law? This, we want to discuss law. This 7-year period is ending roughly in the spring or the fall of 2017, and a new period that's going to go from 2018 to roughly 2025. And that time period will be, some of the censorship will be lifted enough that people will learn to acknowledge who the gods are. Some information will come in. You ever notice, Chuck, in the past decade or so, people tend to have more spiritual discussions, quote unquote. They want to make more biblical references, or they become really proud of certain religions, or they want to start delving into this spiritual or mystical arts. This has been on the increase now for a long time. And I've been saying that you will see this, but none of it will be accurate. None of it will be sound. What it is, it's priming the pump. It's getting people in that direction. Like, for example, you and I have had enough discussions both privately and publicly regarding this matter. How many times do you hear people throwing out Bible quotes and biblical metaphors in public, private, internet, radio, whatever? Often, right? How many times are those quotes and things done accurately? Almost never.
Almost never, yeah.
Right. And they'd have been – here's the thing. If anyone's bringing up any kind of a biblical reference and they don't – preface that the scriptures that are preserved in Hebrew and Greek have yet to be translated to this day. you're listening to, you know, someone's trying to do something there, you know, that's not just something not right. You have to qualify it. So what's interesting though is the consistency and the frequency of these types of discussions is increasing. So the people's minds are being led into the direction of the ethereal, the mystical, the divine, let's say, right? Is it accurate or not? Not at all. It's kind of like when you first prime a pump. You notice how like this dirty water and oil and goop comes out, right? It's like the stuff that's been sitting there, you know, and then now you got it primed. Now you're ready for the water flow. Like how many times you say run the water, but let it run for a few seconds first before you pour a glass, right? Because you don't want that crap sitting in the pipes, right?
Right, right.
Right now it's still the crap sitting in the pipes for the past 2,500 years that's coming out of people's mouths regarding spirituality, meaning the mind. And it's not just the mind, it's also the soul, and it's also the body. I mean, you wouldn't believe how many times I hear people talking about viral scares. You know, there's a Beck, the way they discuss disease renders all refrigeration, unnecessary. What does that mean? Why do we put things in refrigeration? It's to retard the growth of these little microorganisms.
Right.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
But people are starting to, well, have been, the notion that when it gets cold out, they get a cold or the flu because of these microorganisms. How could that be? Those things are dormant in the cold. So it's not that that's causing it.
Yeah, that has cracked me up my entire life, is that in the cold weather, when I was in places where it would drop to, you know, under the freezing point, right, which is 32 degrees Fahrenheit and, 0 degrees Celsius, whatever. But the point is, when it would be below that, when it would be at freezing level, why is it that all of these viruses and, whatever else, bacteria didn't just stop? Because if you take something that has a bit of bacteria on it, you stick it in a freezer.
Or even the regular fridge at 39 or 40, it will stop growing.
Yeah, but meanwhile, I'm talking about, you know, at the freezing point, right? The point of freezing numerically.
It's dormant. It's totally inert at that point.
it should be, right? So you would figure that if the entire atmosphere around you, if the entire, well, not necessarily atmosphere, that might be the wrong word, but if you're surrounded literally in an open air freezer, then you would think that all of these things would go entirely dormant, wouldn't be able to move, wouldn't be able to survive, et cetera. They would at least stop. They might come back to life when it warmed
up.
So
it can't be. It can't be those things. Right. Now, we've just going to show several times what causes this. And you know that anyone who has actually followed those simple instructions have found it to work, except for one person. He came to me and said, Greek, it doesn't work. And I said, well, what part didn't work? He says, well, I didn't do any of it. It just didn't sound like it would work.
That's
kind of stuff you put up with, you know, when you're dealing with giving out information. So you cannot be attached to it is the other. So you see how we went around? We went from the body to the soul, the spirit, how can we go into law form discussion when all of these things that are being put in place are still being either negated, ignored, or there's lack of interest in them, right? So, but you still have a law form. Like, for example, I was in a recent conversation, and someone in the background was saying, who's this guy talking? I mean, you know, you're trying to describe this world that's all chaotic. And I said, well, you know, hold on a second. The world is not chaotic. There's actually a high sense of order, and it's broken up into many subgroups, you know, religions, traditions, things like that. There's a lot of, you don't hear about millions of people, you know, dying in the streets every day for no reason. There's a high level of order, not chaos, in the world right now. What you don't have is lawfulness, right? Mm-hmm. And lawfulness, I think you brought up the point that looking at one's natural environment, I think you used, you know, let's say a remote control. It fits in your hand. It's ergonomic. It has buttons for your digits to depress, and it has different colors and symbols on it that are fairly rational, that anyone who is well-versed in basic communication can determine how to use a remote. You don't need the manual, right?
Well, there's even a representation of exactly how to put the batteries in correctly. If you take a look at it, I mean, there's little instructions exactly which way and which direction and what kind of batteries are required. It is literally embossed on the item, and I seem to feel as though the gods, the God, the source is bright enough to emboss this upon our structure as human beings.
And it is. We've gave a few examples, but the thing is you're still under the censorship, because if everyone came to awareness, which they will in the future, you'd all want to get – you might say, hey, instead of doing this show wherever we are, let's go to Mars and do it. You know, I've got a go-kart here made out of a milk crate and some wheels, and we'll get in it and go. Right? If you knew enough about how the physical reality works, you could go there without a spaceship, right? So the thing is,
People are here. People are here, though. That's the thing. So it's not just simply the law of the people. It's the law of the entire thing, which relates to the people on the planet. Obviously, those laws would change if you change the planet. Obviously, those laws would change if you change the creature. That's the way I see it, you know.
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah, Earth is – the Earth, for example, if you study what has been written before, the Earth has been re-terraformed, right? You've heard of the concept, and you've heard of the quote-unquote myths about things changing on the Earth to support man. That's why we have the scale that we do. You see, it's backwards.
Right.
You know, the Earth was made to support life as we see it. I think we gave the example once in the past, Chuck, that if we were a quarter of an inch tall, we wouldn't be very peaceful, because if a twig falls down, it's a 2.5 on the Richter scale. What the hell is that? Right? If we were 300 feet tall, that wouldn't work either, because the jet stream would be blowing our hair back at 200 miles an hour. We wouldn't be very peaceful either. Right? So the scale that you see of humanity, the physical size we have, and all the other creatures around are to be integrated within the environment that the Earth provides.
There it is. Mm-hmm.
So all of these laws are there. You know, how many times have you heard the importance of water? Water brings life. It also brings destruction, of course. But if you look in nature, For example, let's not even look at moving water. Look at stagnant water or fluids. Can you imagine any fluid other than straight oil that doesn't have water in it? And by the way, when oil is pumped out of the ground, even the best oil is still 10% water, right?
Yeah, but there's always water that gets into it, no matter how they refine it, purify it, everything. There's always a source. Water content at the source, yeah.
Yeah. Now, if you look at all fluids that are water-based or not in nature – that are not moving, like the eyeball, the testicle, the ovary, an egg, the way plants and things hold water. Do you notice any, do they look cubic or do they have any corners on them, 90 degree angles, or is it always an ovoid shape? You see?
Mm-hmm.
It's always an ovoid shape. So why is it that, so why is it when you go and you purchase liquids, they're putting box-like containers? Why don't they? Because when you look at the ovoid shape, what it does is it creates a dynamic where the different geometric form, you know, the being a little pointier on one end and rounder on the other, ovoid shape, right, creates a dynamic movement. In the water looks, the fluids look like they're stationary, but they actually are moving. So why do we have them in boxes or flat bottom containers? Well, because it's easier to ship that way.
Well, it's easier to ship, and it sits on a shelf rather nicely if it's got a flat bottom, right?
Now, if you go back and look at the ancients, they had containers that didn't stand up, right? So they understood the quality. So, again, now we're going into quantity, not quality. And let me just interject one more thing regarding law.
Sure.
You ever heard about impressing people, you know, how people are impressed? You know, people do juggling acts and tricks and things to impress other people or use their status to impress other people or their resume or their position in society.
Right.
Well, I'll tell you one thing that I've noticed trying to be objective is the majority of people are always impressed by quantity, big numbers, right? Now, one thing, if you're going to begin to understand something, you have to understand the character of that thing. Like, for example, we don't really know what a bear is. But we understand enough of its characteristics that we can say we know what a bear is, right? It's fuzzy, it's brown, it's got claws, right? We don't really know what it is, but we know so much about it that we can say we're comfortable we know what a bear is. Now, when you discuss the other realm, the divine, the gods, the realm, one of their characteristics is that whenever they create things, they do it in great numbers, whether it's stars in the sky, grains of sand on the beach, cells in your body, cells in the plant, molecules, you know, everything in creation is always made up of things of large number. Even a pencil sitting in front of you can be dissected into millions of little parts that can be viewed and distinct from each other. So one of the characteristics of the gods is that whenever they engage in what they do, it entails huge numbers, astronomical numbers, always, like there's billions of cells in the body. Okay, so once we understand that and we go back and read what was written about them, do you notice that they use the great numbers as a metaphor, but they don't stress on the number, they stress on the quality.
Right.
Right? Being set apart, being of something of, right? Yeah. So what you will see in the future is people getting over the quantity and focusing more on the quality. How many times have you heard, well, there's billions of Christians or billions of Muslims, they got to be right, you know, or I'm joining this group or this group. Do you know that all of the religions on the planet, bar none, even the small ones, are viewed on very poorly by the gods? There's actually a saying that says that if you're liked by men, you're hated by the gods, and if you're hated by men, you're probably loved by the gods.
Mm. Well, right. This is true, and this axiom has existed for a very long time. This has been spoken in ancient Greece and ancient Rome. This exact phrase, in fact, has been mentioned several times. This is nothing.
And what's the difference between ancient Greece and ancient Rome? Right, they're the same, pretty much. And here's one thing that I implore anyone to. I mean, actually, look at what has been put forward as sayings from the Greek philosophers, and then look and read it in Greek, and you'll find that they're not even translating that very well. But one of my favorite translations that comes very closely, I think it was Socratic, he said that a friend to all is a friend to none.
That's true. That's true. And the profundity of that statement is, well, it's multi-layered. It's really, you know, you were talking about chess and checkers earlier. When you talk about that particular statement, we're talking 3D chess now. There is a lot to that particular statement. And, it's not as simple as it sounds, and it's not as complex as it could be.
it is simple, but it's not easy. That's the other thing. You know, like the Rubik's Cube or something. It looks simple, right? It looks like, you know, hey, look at that. That could do that. Well, 2 days later, how are you doing with that? Well, I don't know. It's getting worse, you know?
Right. You know, and at this point, Greg, I really want to, cause Sherry has not gotten a chance to say very much. Because you and I have batted things back and forth, much like we used to on the Ocelli and the Greek show. Much like we used to privately, honestly, this is the kind of conversation that you and I would have. And, I still value those presentations. That's for sure. But I want to give Sherry a chance now because she's been listening intently and taking notes. And of course, you know, here we go. This is going to sound rather odd, but of course, Sherry has already represented herself as a Wiccan, as someone who is, well, directly, she calls herself a witch. I'm satisfied to call her that as well. You know, the fact is Sherry's a unique individual, and I'd like to hear how the two of you get on discussing this. Of course, we only got about a half hour left, but I think this will be extremely interesting. So, you know, Sherry, your thoughts about all of what we've discussed. I mean, we have definitely gone around a great many topics, definitely hit them in a way that you don't typically seem to receive them out there in, you know, in radio land or anywhere, in fact. You know, your thoughts, I really want to kind of turn it over to you at this point and see what you have in mind, given the entire discussion.
Well, I think I said earlier that I was pleasantly surprised at how much, first of all, that I agreed with a lot of what the Greek was saying, but also that I do have a lot of understanding about the cellular somatic system in the body that relates and projects out and pulls in for our reality and how that's related to the planetary system, the matrix, the whole dynamic of it, not just because I've dug into all those rabbit holes, but being reared as a Wiccan, I'm a third generation, and so it's not like what I think you see on the internet and that you read about in a lot of ways. It's more about dealing with the aspects of time and nature and universal law and implementing those things, not just in the things that you say, but living them every day. And I personally went into the law myself. I became a lawyer in the state of Colorado so that I could, what I thought at the time was, change the world from the inside out. And I ended up getting swallowed and spit back out. So that doesn't, I'm not trying to demean any of the experiences I had, but I do feel like that the judicial system, the legal system that you're talking about that is so corrupt and disgusting and warped is a complete reflection of humanity. And the people that are on this planet are seeing and reflecting what they are holding within them. And so if that seems like it's not right, maybe everyone should check themselves as opposed to trying to fix whatever's going on out there. That's my personal opinion.
Mm. And I know the Greek will actually concur with a lot of what you just said regarding...
I'm sorry. I want to say one more thing because...
Oh, yeah.
Okay, this isn't really a jab at all because I know that it probably wasn't even intended that way, but traditionally a pagan is not somebody who is of ignorance in any form. It's really somebody who believes outside of the traditional worldly religion. And so even in Hebrew, basically it breaks down to belief in more than one god. And when we're talking about the planet and how everything is really rolling behind the scenes. I think pagans probably were less ignorant than what we have walking around today. Again, just my opinion.
Well, I could give you an objective view or report on that, if you like.
Absolutely.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, by all means, Rick, I'm trying to stay out of this. I would like to just have you come back.
The term pagan just means it's ignorant how it's used colloquially. And the approach on how it's just someone outside of the conventional religions is kind of interesting as well, because if one does a healthy, objective examination of all of the conventional world religions, let's say Islam, Christianity, Hinduism, and Buddhism as the major ones, you'll find that they are 100% within the definition of what paganism would be considered anyway.
Right. I think that's weird that you're saying that, because in my mind, when you refer to pagan, that's what I think of, but most
No, it's not a put down. It just is what it is. Like, for example, let's look at another thing. Have you ever heard of monotheistic religion? There's no such thing. Have you ever heard of the term army? When you say army, do you think of one soldier or is it a multitude, right? Whenever do this in conversation, and just to preface, you know, one of the things that I say is if mankind has no future, and people say, why do you say that, Greek? I says, well, if mankind's future is dependent on his children, he has no future because all the children have been turned into goats, because people call their goats kids, right? So what's going on right now is you're living in a culture, a society, and it's conventional and traditional to not mean what you say and not say what you mean. Not you, but just people in general. It's accepted. And
every day, and that's where – so people look at me because I make claim of being a witch and I cast intentionally and I use my words with intention. They think that I'm somehow odd or different when in truth everyone's doing it every day.
They're not aware. Yeah, but the thing is, they're not aware of the other side. Like, for example, when you're dealing with, let's use the term army. That's a good one, because how many times have you say people, you hear people say, I believe in God. And I'm like, okay, which one? Even the biblical text lists 36 by name. In the Rig Vedas, there's 160. There's millions of them. Which one are you talking? So right away, you're talking about ignorance of that subject. Now, from the Wiccan or witch perspective or that thing, it's just a matter of being able to control your environment based on all of the faculties that you have. In other words, we're not chickens, we're not whales, we're not bees, we're not tigers, we're people. And people have a unique ability to communicate, and we have an interesting and a unique attachment to powers that we are not aware of. And allegedly, and so-called practitioners in many cultures have evolved or held on to powers that come through speaking. You can speak something and make it happen, you know, like what's called a spell. You can will something, right? You can actually evoke another, a god to do something, right? You hear about these satanic cults, which are not satanic, by the way, that do these things, right? So what's interesting is that all of it is permissible. But the thing is, do you know what you're doing? You know, a four-year-old, not you, but, you know, you could put a four-year-old behind a real fire truck and prop him up with telephone books and blocks under his feet. Do you really want him driving that? The answer is no. So there's a lot of people in the alternative or even many aspects of hidden movements that do practice the spiritual arts, let's say, that really don't know what they're doing. And that's easy to surmise just by having a discussion with them, unless they're holding back. And what I try to do is impart some objectivity into the matter to show how rich of a field it is, how open it is, and how untapped it is, even to this day. And I'm not going to get into too many detail, but I've come across people that have been in or are in secret societies, right? I don't need to name what they are. I mean, you can use your imagination. And I've mentioned certain things that I even mentioned on air right now with you guys, and they are just totally freaked out. They're like, how did you learn that? I said, just by, you know, looking around me and studying. And they're like, don't say that to anyone, they tell me. You shouldn't be saying that. You know, I'm like, why? It's obvious. Right? In other words, there's a world of the gods and there's a world of the unseen controls the seen. right? And back to you mentioning about spells and being a Wicca or a witch and such. One thing that we are endowed with is we are endowed with the power of speech and thought that are so well intertwined that the speech and thought of a man or a woman that has a deep understanding of reality, you can actually speak things and have them happen, right? That's called a spell in many aspects, right? So this knowledge and all of this will be brought to the forefront in the next society. In the next society, people will be able to speak things into existence more manifest than they are today without evoking many of the things that they're doing now. Now, going back to the crowd mentality.
The only reason that people are invoking is because it's like what you were saying earlier. It is the amateurs. It's the people who don't really have the basis of understanding of where and what they're dealing with. They don't understand quantum physics. They don't understand spiritual law. They don't understand basic law. They don't, right. You know, and that causes in itself complete turmoil in that mirror dimensional universe. So it's like, it's almost, when you're saying that it's moving forward and it is going to be revealed, it is, because I think that mirror is getting ready to crack.
Well, it is being real, but it's being done like you would watch. You would go to a film for 2 hours and they show you a 5-minute trailer of next year's film. It's not the whole film. A little bit is being revealed because right now humanity is not is in an unrehabilitatable state. It cannot be fixed. It has to run its course and then it's going to be interfered with and then restarted. Right. And that's, it's unfortunate and it's fortunate either way. But
do you think that there's a why involved in that?
Absolutely. Yeah.
Okay,
we lack the maturity. Here's the thing. You don't talk about sex ed to a 3-year-old because they lack the physical parts. They're too immature spiritually or mentally. They're not at that point yet. It's not important. It's out of context. The information that we have about the spiritual world, you see, these are beings that have IQs of a million or infinite knowledge. They're talking, when we look at ancient texts and things that have been imparted to mankind to be memorialized even to this day, what's called, let's say, the holy writs of the world, that is their baby talk to us, and people still refuse to go into comprehension with it, right?
Well, do you think that they're looking, I mean, honestly and truly, like, humans are so egotistical. That when you take a look at around the planet, like to me, even though I realize that we're probably getting seen from outside and being watched because this is a place of creation. But on the other hand, it's almost like looking at an ant pile. I mean, people really, I'm not saying that everyone is
Well, we can go into a discussion that would take dozens of hours to preface the nature of this reality, which anyone can do. But the thing is, if you couple the cosmic censorship, people are blocked at this point. Why bother? Just relax. Like, for example, Chuck will tell you, I very often try to give accurate biblical metaphors and biblical quotes, right? Only because it's first class information. For example, the biblical text, not the King James and the stuff, but what's preserved in the Hebrew and Greek, is first class information. It's not that I prefer it or believe in it any more than anything else. It's that if I offered you, let's say, to go to Europe on an airplane ticket, it's free. Where do you want to sit? First class, business, or coach? Well, it's free. I'll sit first class, you know. So it has the most information about most things, so I tend to gravitate towards that.
Don't you think that also has the most manipulation? I mean,
no.
That's what my fear is.
The manipulation is secondary. And the thing is, when you hear the biblical text or the religions that have hijacked it as being manipulative, if you actually do a next step examination, they're not using anything biblical at all. It goes back to a tradition that is outside of that.
Is actually considered pagan. But see, that's the whole thing.
Well, it's worse than pagan in a sense. There's many levels. Let's just stay away from the word pagan because I tend to use the etymological definition, which I find is wholeheartedly incomplete, even though that's the best we have. Mm-hmm. What I would suggest is this. If you consider pre-flood man, okay, now whether you believe or not in it or not is irrelevant. What I'm trying to say here when I mention the flood is every world culture has a flood myth, okay, where mankind was destroyed and a small group was not, let's say. If you look at pre-flood man, they were in full awareness of the other side, of the gods and how to deal with them and the angelic beings and so on and so forth. Post-flood, all of that changed. And then 2,500 years ago with the axial period, knowledge of those things changed until almost to the point where it went down to zero. And this time period right now that is ending here very soon, there will be more of an opening and appearing in not only to all of the gods, but more of the higher level gods.
But
because the gods have a society.
Mm-hmm. But isn't it, I mean, so define then again for me how it is, because to me, as in my religious views and what I see coming, it's the cycle of the feminine returning, and that doesn't mean female necessarily, but it is it's the higher vibration of consciousness from the heart as opposed from the mind. And so,
The heart and the mind, you know, there's actual brain tissue in the heart. So the feminine is interesting, from that point, but you have to watch it in how the worldview pans out objectively. Again, I suggest to people, get all the information and then make the decision. How many times have you heard that, right? Now, you really can't get all the information, but try to saturate yourself in any subject, whatever, whether it's car mechanics, spirituality, medicine, football, whatever. Get as much information as you can, exhaust it, and then make a decision. And I think Chuck might agree with that, doing the JFK research. I don't think you just did that for a week and then said you're a researcher. I think you did it for quite a bit of time. You try to saturate yourself and then make mindful decisions. And this to do this on a personal level right now is, like, I can confess I've been at this for almost a decade and a half full time on many, many subjects, and I wouldn't recommend this to anyone. And like I mentioned to Chuck earlier, you always hear me giving biblical references, but you never hear me telling anyone, go read the Bible. Never. You will never hear me say that. Why? Because you're not going to understand anything in it anyway. So why would I send someone on something like that? And how do I know? Why would it be so arrogant to say to someone, you're not going to understand anything in anyway? Because if you don't realize that what you're looking at has been tainted, you're already been throwing off into another misdemeanor, bad behavior. So you have to look at things that are source materials, and if things are copies or translations, they have to be true. They can't be versions, right? So ultimately, saturate yourself in whatever topic it is. Just like, for example, you hear a car going down the road, it's making a noise. And, well, if you're a car mechanic, you could say, oh, that's the water pump. Oh, that's the power steering pump. That's the serpentine belt. You know, most people would say, oh, that's just a noise. I don't know. Go to the mechanic. But the problem now is when you go to the mechanic, you know, you tell them what's wrong with it and you give them the keys. And before you leave, the mechanic asks you, by the way, where's the steering wheel? So the problem right now when people are trying to learn about spirituality or medicine or history or whatever, they're going to people that don't even know where the steering wheel is. And that's why I just throw my hands up in the air and say it's not time yet. How can you have authorities in various fields, or pretty much every field that man engages with has an authoritative figure, whether it's at the university or in the industry or whatever. How can the people that are at the top of their field be total morons? It just behooves anyone to figure out why. And there's really no explanation other than the gods have actually. Yeah.
Because if you bring in anybody who has a brain or has an intelligence level of looking outside of the box, I guess, they kill them. And
because that leads again. This is why one of the advices I give to people is you're at the point right now in history, and you have been for a while, where if both the malevolent and benevolent spiritual world are against mankind's progress. Both sides, both the good guys and the bad guys, are against mankind. Like, for example, how many times have you heard someone come up with an invention, free energy, or a water-powered car, or a cure for cancer? And the minute they say, you can do those things, but the minute you go in public and you say, I am doing this to make the world a better place, they're usually dead or whatever. Or, you know, they end up spending the next 20 years feeding pigeons on a park bench.
Right.
Because you have both the malevolent and the benevolence against you. Why? The malevolence will always be against you. They don't want to see you doing better. But mankind has reached a termination point right now where now the benevolence are against you also. Why? Very simply is this, that the gods, even the most minor gods, love children more than parents, their own parents do. The most loving parent has for their child is nothing compared to how the gods love the child. And the way that people are treating their children, from the pranking all the way to their parody ritual sacrifices with birthday cakes and Santa Claus, and every culture and actual sacrifices has got the gods completely disgusted on both sides. So the thing right now, that's why Chuck has heard me speak about this, and we've elaborated on this for a long time. But again, like we started, pursue things that are wonderful and pleasant, and if any subject of interest you have, saturate yourself in it and look at it with a clear mind.
Yeah, that's really the best advice. And of course, you know, going forward with this kind of discussion, which we're almost out of time on now, but it is, it's amazing to me that it often comes down to the very same sentiment that I repeat, which is that, quite often I start to get into certain subject matter and I say to myself, you know, humanity or the collection of people or however it is you want to describe it, has not matured enough to get to a point where certain things can be accomplished. For instance, and this is of course one of those things I carry with me all the time, the idea that there is no need for military conflict. There is no need for war. There is no need for these things. If we were more mature as a species, we could remove that from the equation entirely. Right?
You are maturing though. But you're not mature yet. This is the whole thing.
That's the thing, yes.
Yeah, you will be. And the next society will be much more mature. You yourself will be much more mature when you're brought back. So everyone will be. Here's the thing. You know, we mentioned the term army, and it's ridiculous to think of one toy soldier because it's a multitude. When you say God or gods, it's a multitude.
Right.
Within that multitude, there's a hierarchy, just like the military. You have the infantry ground on the boots on the ground grunts that tend to be more violent. And those are the ones that most of the population engages. You know, let's say China were to attack a country. It's not 5 million generals that are coming in, tearing down your house and raping everyone. It's the infantry grunts, the minimal training. They tend to be most violent. So the spiritual beings that humanity has been dealing with for almost the past 6,000 years have been the infantry grunts. And this is what all your major religions are based on and what people's personal experiences are. Now, as you go higher up the ladder, the food tends to be better. The uniforms tend to be better and the living quarters tend to be better. You know what I mean? The quality of everything goes up. Mm-hmm. Now, what is happening with mankind in short is the head deity, and I'll ask another question regarding that. He's creating a family of that authority, and that family is being created through humanity. That's why most, for lack of a better term, of the lower entities got a hard-on for messing with people, because they're in disagreement with this. Now, I'll pose a question in public, which I usually don't, and I've posed this question to high-level religious people and spiritualists, and I ask them, what makes the Almighty God or the head creator the Almighty or the head? And no one can answer. And the answer is very simple if you study this. He is not subject to death. Death is subject to him, and let's use the term him for now. You see, that is every holy writ that you read, regardless, it's not about religion. It's not about this or that. Yes, there's laws and things like that, but ultimately it's about life and death. You're coming into a period in the universe, it's not only the earth, where this is a double negative that is used that people don't understand. You're coming into a time period now, not now, but starting in the 15 or so years, where death will be put to death. Now, if death is put to death, there is no more death. And if there's no more death, there's only, you see?
Mm.
And this is the time period where people will be born in the future and they will be going through puberty at 45. You'll get your second set of teeth at 30, you see? And the lifespan goes on and on. And this is how it was at one point.
Anyway, if you look at actually the maturity level of the human race, not one person on this planet should probably have a child before the age of 50, which I'm not saying that I personally am volunteering for that. I'm just saying that the mentality, the maturity levels, the understanding, we're shoved into these little time periods. And so I know we don't have very much time left, but I really wanted to jump into the whole reality of dimensional time and how I feel like it's being manipulated right now, and that's part of this.
Well, that's simple. Let me just throw something in.
Well, before we go there, I've had multiple questions, Greek, which all relate to the same thing. What day is it, actually?
I'm reckoning around the 17th day of the 10th month. In other words, it's 17 days into the 10th moon. It appears this year is going to have a 13th month. Mm-hmm. And intercalary, I've been doing this for so long. And the importance of this is such, if you notice a natural event, trees, leaves turning yellow, the first frost, or if you're fishing when a school of fish are somewhere, they don't go, you know, the weather, the fish, the tigers, the birds, they don't go on the Pope's work schedule from January through December. They go on the sun, the moon, and the stars clockwork, right? So what this does, when you understand that the full moon is the new moon and the day starts at high noon and everything around you, the tigers, the bees, the flies, the birds, the planet, the mountains, the rivers, work on that schedule. How far ahead are you in understanding what's going on? I mean, it doesn't mean you're going to be popular with people, but whatever, like, in other words, today is the 30th of November. Next year, the 30th of November, I think you're going to be a week off from today where the moon and the sun and the stars are. But if you know that today is the 17th day of the 10th month, next year on the 17th day of the 10th month, everything will be exactly aligned in nature like it is now.
Right. So.
And believe it or not, we've absolutely run completely out of time. Of course, our special guest tonight was the Greek. We got a lot of Greek speak in, and we even had Sherry Wisdom interacting with the Greek, which I thought was extremely compelling. And unfortunately, the show is over. Anyhow, appreciate it, Greek. It's always a pleasure to speak with you, sir.
Okay, thanks for having me.
And Sherry Wisdom will be back next Wednesday, and who knows, maybe even pop up another time on the Ocelli Effect. But stay tuned to American Freedom Radio, because even though I said it last night, the human frequency is supposed to be up next tonight. And go to Ocelli.com, please, and support my work. I do appreciate all of you guys who have. Once again, everybody have a good night, and we'll see you tomorrow.
News and information you can trust. This is American Freedom Radio. Freedom, freedom, American Freedom Radio. Radio. American Freedom Radio.
Are you feeling embarrassed and stuck because you can't focus or concentrate? I have a confession to make. I spent years unable to think clearly, like I was in a fog. I was going through the motions, running my companies, and I hated feeling groggy and mentally sluggish. I couldn't get ahead like this. It's no secret, the powers that be want us dumbed down. Chemicals, fluoride, our brains are under siege, and we are experiencing lower IQs. But now there's a weapon to fight back and win. Introducing DNA Evolve, a revolutionary breakthrough in a category of cognitive enhancers called nootropics. I've been using DNA Evolve and couldn't feel better. For me, it works. It feels great to get things done again and get ahead. Try a free sample for yourself at DNAEvolveSample.com. That's DNAEvolveSample.com. Supplies are limited, so go to DNAEvolveSample.com right now.
Nutritious food is real body armor. It builds muscle, burns fat, improves digestion, and feeds the entire body the nutrients it needs. Did you know the U.S. government banned the hemp plant from growing in the United States and classified it as a Schedule I drug to hide it behind the marijuana plant? People have been confused about this plant for over 80 years, and many still don't know what hemp is. So now you know hemp is not marijuana, and marijuana is not hemp. They are different varieties of the same species. HempUSA.org wants the world to know these basic facts and to help people understand that hemp protein powder is the best-kept health secret you need to know about. Remember, hemp protein powder contains 53% protein, is gluten-free, anti-inflammatory, non-GMO, and is loaded with nutrients. Call 888-910-4367, 888-910-4367, and see what our powder, seeds, and oil can do for you. Only at HempUSA.org.
We all know that they're not telling us the truth. So stand up for your rights, demand the real medicine, and your right to use it and grow it. This is Rick Simpson, and you're listening to American Freedom Radio.
Wadia will remain a dictatorship.
Or be quiet.
Why are you guys so anti-dictators? Imagine if America was a dictatorship. You could let 1% of the people have all the nation's wealth. You could help your rich friends get richer by cutting their taxes and bailing them out when they gamble and lose.